Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, good friends. It's Friday, June 3rd, about 8:30 in the morning, Washington time. Welcome back to the Bill Press Pod. Time to gather around the round table for today's round table with three top political reporters to look back on the big news from our nation's capital, by the way, on June 3rd, First Lady's birthday. And today, even with Congress out of town, there was still a lot going on this week in the wake of his visits to the sites of two mass shootings in Buffalo, New York, and Uvalde, Texas. President Biden addressed the nation from the White House last night, delivering an impassioned plea for Congress to act on a ban on assault rifles, raising the legal age to purchase an assault weapon, and authorizing so-called red flag laws. But will this time be any different? On another front, we saw something almost never seen before in Washington this week. A member of the Biden administration, actually more than one, admitting that they were wrong in thinking inflation was only transitory. It's still here. Consumers are still hurting. How serious is it? And meanwhile, members of Congress are out working on the only thing they really care about, getting reelected. With 5 months to go before the midterms, where do things stand for Republicans and Democrats? Well, here today to help us sort it all out, Jason Dick, a newly appointed editor-in-chief of CQ Roll Call. Welcome, Jason, and congratulations.
Thank you, Bill.
Sudeep Reddy, a managing editor of Politico, back again. Hello, Sudeep.
Hi, Bill.
And joining us from Yahoo News, national political reporter, Tom LoBianco. Hey, Tom, good to have you back as well.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
So we heard the president in a very impassioned speech from the White House last night. Here he is saying, after Columbine and all these other mass shootings, enough is enough.
After Columbine, after Sandy Hook, after Charleston, after Orlando, after Las Vegas, after Parkland, nothing has been done. This time that can't be true. This time we must actually do something. This is not about taking away anyone's guns. It's about protecting our freedoms to go to school, to a grocery store, to a church, without being shot and killed.
So, Jason, will it make any difference?
I'm skeptical about that, and not I'm not trying to minimize the impact that, you know, this has had on people's lives or the passions involved or the president's sincerity. It's just that a primetime presidential address, as rare as those are, you know, has, I think, less of an effect than it did, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. This is certainly of premier importance in political circles and in people's lives. I mean, we've been talking about gun control and these tragedies now, just one kind of keeps coming after another. This week, we had another one in Tulsa where four people were killed at a hospital because somebody was pissed off about being in pain after surgery. So I don't know if the normalization of this kind of violence can be dented by just simply, some people feeling that they need to talk about it, like Biden. I mean, whether we have action on it in Congress is always faces steep odds. But I mean, there are some sincere attempts, but I just don't. I mean, sadly, I don't see this having like a huge impact. At least like having a speech on Thursday night.
Well, Sudeep, how does the president's call last night for pretty bold measures, banning assault weapons, which of course he authored when he was in the Senate, and other pretty bold measures. How does that square with what we hear that senators from both parties are working on, which seem to be more in the doable category, right? Not swinging for the fences.
The big difference here is in the do something camp that a lot of senators are looking at right now, rather than the Biden plan, which we should remind you was actually something he did pledge to do on day one, a big gun package, and day one has long passed. But what we're talking about from this bipartisan group in the Senate is really just to say that they've done something, to perhaps touch a little bit on some of the what they call the common sense measures. When you see the senior senator from Texas, John Cornyn, talking about perhaps even getting something done, you do think, okay, well, maybe it's possible they'll pass something for good measure, just to say they've done something. But it's not banning assault rifles or high capacity magazines like a lot of people are asking for right now.
Is there the chance, from your read, that even a modest, doable, non-controversial measure could get 10 votes so they can get over the filibuster?
I think it's possible that something small and non-controversial can get 10 votes. The more non-controversial and smaller, the more likely it is, of course. And that seems to be where this is headed in this moment. And the fact that we've gone through in the last decade, Newtown, Connecticut, San Bernardino, Orlando, Vegas, Parkland, I can just go on and on and on. And we always thought, well, maybe this will change something. They didn't change anything. And it seems unlikely that this is going to change anything on a large scale.
Well, on that point, Tom, the Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, beginning of the week said, I hope we can come together and get something done. And then a couple of days later, here he is talking about what he sees as the top priorities, the main issues that the Senate ought to be dealing with.
Seems to me there are two broad categories that underscore the problem: mental illness and school safety. So hopefully we can find a way to come together and make some progress on this horrendous problem, consistent with our Constitution and with our values.
All right. So Tom, Mitch McConnell saying, well, the issues are mental health and school safety. Doesn't talk about doing anything about the guns.
pretty typical of every previous gun debate we have. You know, the cyclical, right? You know, the Republicans say that precisely that, school safety and mental health, and Democrats say, gun measures, the things dealing with the actual manufacture, distribution, control and regulation of the weapons. And, the thing that I look at, this kind of goes back to, why is Biden doing this at the White House? Why is he kind of leaning into this? And whether or not anything will change this time, right? That's kind of the question we all have is like, will there be anything, even at the most marginal of changes? And, in the moment right now, there seems to be a, quote, stickiness of this issue in a way that take 22, the year 2022, all right? Pick a disaster, the Ukraine war. Wherever you stand on the abortion decision that's going to be coming down soon, wherever you stand on inflation and gas prices and again the price of a gallon of milk, nothing seems to be ever present because there's always a new disaster. And the thing that the things I'm asking my sources on this is is this something that sticks? Or do we find another disaster that pops up next week?
And what are they telling you?
For the Democrats in particular, hopeful optimism that this is the one that finally breaks the dam on doing something. Hesitant, I guess I should say, optimism. For the Republicans, it's that it's inflation, money, economic woes still dominate, and they have not been shaken from that perch, and it probably will dominate. So, for the Democrats, it seems like maybe they finally have found an issue. I know from my Democrat campaign sources that they've been looking for an issue to run on in the midterms for forever.
So, Yeah, let me jump in here to say I want to come back to each of you to talk about the impact that this issue and some of the other issues might have on the midterms. So hold the rest of your thoughts on that for just a moment, because I want to ask you also about something that this is kind of breaking news. I didn't learn about this until this morning, but last evening, the January 6th committee announced that next Thursday, June 9th, at 8 p.m. in the evening, which is unusual in itself, the committee is going to hold its first public hearing where they are going to present to the American people the summary of everything that they have found out so far in all of their thousands of interviews and thousands of documents that they reviewed about what happened on January 6th, what led up to it, and who was responsible. Jason, this could be a real bombshell, right?
I mean, it certainly has the potential, depending on what they reveal, but I'm a little cautious in describing it as game changing, because I mean, we all thought that when a mob spurred by Donald Trump was sicked on the Capitol and they broke windows and tried to kill police officers, that was a game changer in itself. And I mean, I feel like there is, as Tom was alluding to, there's just this, like, you know, there's one disaster after another. It's hard to keep up with, with them.
Right.
And I think that, you know, the committee has done, you know, just an incredible amount of work and interviews and the amount of information that they've turned up to hold people accountable for what happened on January 6th is immense, and a sort of a testament to, you know, like, sort of following the trail wherever it goes. But I don't know if it changes the narrative, because again, people are sort of in their silos. I mean, we have more than three television channels to tune into on Thursday night at 8 p.m. And I think I don't know how many people are going to, you know, not watch Obi-Wan Kenobi on Disney Plus in order to tune into the January 6th committee.
Sudeep, is it possible, as horrific as it was, the coup on January, attempted coup on January 6th, is it possible that kind of the steam has gone out of the engine, meaning people have kind of lost interest?
The people who you would want to maintain an interest have probably lost interest in this. They see it as the past, as old news. There has not been another attempt at the Capitol. So the people who looked at it and shrugged are like that. There are obviously people who do care about this, who are going to maintain some interest, and the benefit for the committee of doing this in this moment is to I guess put a bit of a bow on their work, to connect the dots, to show how profoundly damaging this moment was. That could stick. It could last in the narrative. I'm sure we will see it in the next 5 months over the campaign season, but is it going to really change anybody's mind at their core? Of course not.
Right. And Tom, I think the big outstanding question is, are they going to go after Donald Trump himself?
Yeah. What do we know? Yeah. I mean, you know, from what we've seen so far, and, you know, huge shout out to among other folks, man, you know, Kyle Chaney at Politico has been an absolute beast on this beat. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of, if you're listening to this, you probably already follow him, but he's been incredible. you know, it's hard to tell. They seem to be, and I don't want to, you know, we're working on our own piece right now, so I don't want to like blow up you know, our own scene setter for the committee next week. But you know, they seem to have learned some lessons from these previous Trump investigations. You know, what we're hearing about, like, you know, kind of the limitations of bringing in the witnesses, not, you know, not letting them, you know, not having Corey Lewandowski sit in front of you, you know, firing off the Fifth Amendment for, you know, 8 hours mm-hmm. or whatever it is, and, you know, make a cable news spectacle out of it. So, you know, perhaps more control. But again, you know, you almost wonder, and again, to what Jason was saying, you almost wonder, you know, how much of this is about moving the needle on 2022 and 2024 versus, well, you know, how much do you need? You need a historical record. I mean, we can't, you know, this Washington in this moment was unable to produce a 9/11 style commission. It's just impossible at this moment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how much of this is historical versus the immediate? And that's, and I get the sense there's more of a historical thinking behind it too.
Right. Well, speaking of history, I thought history was made this week. All of us have been covering Washington or national politics for a long time. I never remember a leading member of any administration making the admission that we heard from Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary, this week in an interview with CNN's Wolf Blitzer on the issue of inflation.
I was wrong then about the path that inflation would take. There have been unanticipated and large shocks to the economy that have affected our economy badly that I didn't, at the time, didn't fully understand.
So I guess we're not going to hear that, but we all know Janet Yellen said, right, that she got it wrong. She thought it was going to be transitory, and it turned out not to be. Jason, how about it, right? You never heard Donald Trump say, I was wrong.
That is correct. And you know, this is, I think, sort of laudable, and you wonder why more people don't do it. Because in general, I mean, everybody seems to have a fairly firm grasp that gas is more expensive, that baby formula is hard to get, that, I mean, that there are problems with the supply chain. And for somebody in the administration to acknowledge reality and then also say, like, and we had a part in this and we're going to try to fix it and do better. I mean, it is sort of admirable on a sort of a personal and moral level. On a political level, I don't know how that translates, but the administration isn't working with a lot here. I mean, there's only so much that they can do. I mean, the president himself has basically said to the Fed and Jerome Powell, this is up to you, buddy, to keep track of. So, you know, whether that overcomes enough people's concerns or it is just sort of an acknowledgement, I don't know. But it seems like Yellen is just sort of, again, kind of stating the obvious, which doesn't happen all that often in politics, particularly when you're talking about your own role in something that went wrong.
Yeah. So, but Sudeep, how serious a problem, political problem, is this for Democrats?
It is a profound political problem. This is the economy question that obviously sinks parties in normal times. It's just a very unusual moment to have high inflation, but to also have a hot job market. The latest numbers we got out this morning show just continued strength in the hiring on the hiring front. 390,000 jobs or so added. It's just a unusual period when you got unemployment this low at 3.6%. To have the Fed and the Treasury get out there saying, yeah, everything is actually reasonably strong, but we know it's going to get worse. To have to signal that and to have to tell people that inflation might come down, but it's probably not going to come down fast enough, the old transitory line, it's signaling something that ahead is a problem. And you're already starting to see the signs of caution in the corporate world. You're starting to see budgets get pulled back. All of that is actually, if you think it's a problem now for Democrats, in 3 months from now, it's going to be all about the economy and the troubles of the economy. That is not a good place to be. The only saving grace is that if it happens now, it means that it's possible we'll be out of the downturn before the presidential cycle fully heats up, because there's probably nothing more devastating than the party having to deal with high inflation and a weak economy in a presidential race.
Right. So, Tom, as Sudeep mentions, the economy overall is relatively strong, very low unemployment, hot job market. Consumer spending the last few months has actually gone up, but people are facing very high gas prices and very high food prices. So what can the president actually do about that? Isn't that the conundrum here for the White House?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for the White House, right? So it's kind of the same thing he's trying to do with gun control, right? Which is, you know, shine a light on it, put the spotlight on it, and maybe keep it there. I mean, it's, you know, it's uncertain. Like, you know, can they really do anything here to, you know, I mean, he's flying to Saudi Arabia. You know, he's going to meet with bin Salman. And, you know, and that sparked a backlash from the 9/11 families. And, you know, so he's trying to work on this. You know, one thing to go back to, like, this, you know, why this is resonating. Pence's people have been working on this behind the scenes. They've been polling this issue, and you know, Pence had tweeted a photo of himself outside a Marathon gas station paying like $55 for a gas tank. You know, it's like, and you know, he had the furrowed brow and the very stern look, the serious Pence, which is, you know, kind of the only mode for him, and he kind of like. But the thing of it is, which is, and I think this is what his pollsters were getting at and why they're leaning into this, and, you know, why we see this disconnect with, you know, Sudeep says, you know, it's like with, you know, strong employment numbers, you know, other barometers being strong, you know, voters, regular people, are not economists. They don't listen to Janet Yellen and, you know, like, it's like they're not dialed into this stuff. They got other stuff going on. You know, and to a degree too, to a big degree, regular people are kind of tuning out politics. You know, after 5 years of the constancy of Trump and the, you know, each new hand grenade tossed out there, whether it was Stormy Daniels or Trump Russia or, I mean, you name it, it's kind of, people are kind of retreating from the reality show of politics. And but this is something, when you go to the gas, I went to the gas pump and I put 17 gallons in and I paid like $85. I was astounded. I took a photo. I didn't tweet it, but I was like, whoa, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So like there's permanency to it. And that's, you know, to the politics. It resonates.
We all have those stories. I paid $5.09 a gallon last week in Northern Virginia and was not happy about it. All right. We have edged around and the primaries and the impact inflation and guns and abortion will have on the midterm elections. Let's jump into that with our panel. But after a quick break, we'll be back with Jason Dick from Roll Call, Sudeep Reddy from Politico, Tom Lobianco from Yahoo News here on the Bill Press Pod. And today's roundtable is brought to you by the Laborers International Union of North America, or LIUNA, L-I-U-N-A. Over 500,000 strong, the laborers union, they're the backbone of the American labor movement under President Terry O'Sullivan, active in the construction field, of course, rebuilding America's infrastructure, in the energy field with renewable energy, solar panels and wind turbines, as well as old-fashioned pipelines, and very active in the healthcare field as well with government workers around the country. We salute the good members, men and women of the Laborers Union. Thank them for their great work rebuilding America and thank them for their support of the Bill Press Pod.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
And we're back with today's roundtable. Joining us, Tom LoBianco, Yahoo News, Deep Ready, Politico, and Jason Dick from CQ Roll Call. We are about 5 months out now from the primaries. A major Republican primaries have been held. We sort of see now, with the exception of a couple of states like Michigan, who the major players are going to be heading into November. 5 months out, Jason, where do things stand for Republicans and Democrats in general, as you see it?
If I was a political strategist or somebody who made my living, depending on who was going to be in the majority, I would rather be a Republican right now.
Both House and Senate?
Certainly the House is a little bit more baked in, particularly because of redistricting has given like a little bit of advantage. We thought it was going to be an even draw, with Democrats and Republicans and some court cases that were handed down, some maps that were thrown out, have kind of moved the needle a little bit back towards Republicans in places like New York and Florida. And again, when you only have a 5-seat majority, it doesn't take a whole lot. And then you've got the history angle of the president's party almost always losing a significant mm-hmm. number of seats in his first
right,
midterm.
Right.
The Senate is, I know that a lot of my colleagues, people like Nathan Gonzalez at Inside Elections and the folks at the Cook Report, like Dave Wasserman and so forth. I mean, like they're a little bit, they see some of the same trends, in the Senate. I always hesitate because I think back on 2018, where Democrats had this huge night that was really tied a lot towards public opinion toward Donald Trump, picked up, more than 40 seats, the majority, and then they lost 2 seats in the Senate. It defied some historical trends, but it also spoke to like the way people have spread themselves out politically. I think that, it really comes down to just a few of those states. I mean, in a 50-50 Senate, that's obvious. But, you look at Georgia where, we have a toss-up race between Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker. Well, I mean, Warnock's got to feel a little better about his chances after just listening to Herschel Walker talk in the last week since he wrapped up the nomination. In Arizona, Mark Kelly, a Democrat, is also in a top toss-up race. And he's running against this sort of clown car full of Republicans, where it's not exactly clear who's going to come out on top. Donald Trump weighed in on one of them, Blake Masters, and just recently. And it's unclear to me. I mean, certainly the way that the president's numbers are underwater doesn't help a Democrat. But then that's offset by things like Pennsylvania, where, John Fetterman probably has a pretty good shot at flipping a Republican seat whom he doesn't even know who's going to run against at this point. So it's I hesitate on making any kind of predictions on the Senate because I think it could go a lot of different ways. The House, I just think, is more likely than not a lost cause for Democrats at this point.
Yeah. How do you see the landscape, Sudeep?
Historically, this is not going to be a good year for Democrats. We've known that for a while, but it is just such a scrambled moment in all sorts of other ways. The mixed signals on the economy, the strong job market and the awful inflation, but so many other issues too that you think will go a certain way and people don't quite have a perfect handle on that. There was I think just in the last week, the publisher of the Bulwark, Sarah Longwell, tweeted out that she was doing a focus group of Trump voters in Florida, and she said that everybody was in favor of over 21 laws to obtain a gun. She said that everyone is in favor of banning assault rifles. It is possible that all of the cross currents that we've got right now could lead people to think about different kinds of issues than just Joe Biden in this moment. There's so many things weighing on the American psyche that it it could be that people look at the January 6th committee and decide that, particularly swing voters, decide that you know, maybe I'm not actually happy with what the alternative is to Democrats right now, and that's where you could get some of those unusual outcomes, like the House flipping and the Senate not.
Mm-hmm. Tom, you alluded to a couple of these earlier factors that could weigh in and maybe change the equation. President Biden last night in his address to the nation certainly hinted at that as well when he talked about the American people being so angry about no action on gun control that they would reflect that in their votes this November. Here quickly is the president.
If Congress fails, I believe this time a majority of the American people won't give up either. I believe the majority of you will act to turn your outrage into making this issue central to your vote. Enough, enough, enough.
So, Tom, guns and then also the issue of abortion. Could they be two issues that drive Democratic turnout and change the equation a little bit?
Yeah, you know, the thing with the guns in particular, and, you know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, like we used to talk about Panera moms as, you know, swing voters, you know, previous cycles, and, you know, go back right. A few decades and you talk about soccer moms. And, you know, you do get a sense from both sides that they're like, okay, we need to play to the suburbs. We need to play to the swing voters who, you know, when you have these hardened extremes, and, you know, on each side of the party, I mean, ironically enough, it kind of leads you back to where traditional politics is, right? Which is a, you know, a pivot to the middle. You know, so, you know, make it through the primary, go back to the general, you know, and be broadly acceptable. And you've actually, you know, ironically enough, you've seen that with Dr. Oz, who seems to be trying to kind of walk past this recount that's inevitable out there in Pennsylvania. And, you know, for in that regard, guns in particular, and abortion too, but, you know, the kind of the immediacy and the constancy of guns, there's a very raw emotional and visceral reaction. You know, it's very, it hits close to home. I mean, I'm a parent, mm-hmm. you know, I got kids not much younger than the kids that were killed in Uvalde. And that's the kind of thing that resonates. And, you know, again, it's like, what issues work? You know, mm-hmm. Carville, you know, months ago was saying the Democrats need to just focus singularly on the economy. And, you know, again, gas prices and milk. And it's not, you know, those are the things that seem to be sticking right now. It could. I mean, could it swing things? You know, that's up against a lot of institutional issues right now, not least of which is the maps, you know, kind of the institutional edge that Republicans have held in the state houses drawing these maps for years now, for over a decade.
Yeah. So, Jason, one of the kind of analyses that I read this week, picking up on what Tom said, is that this year it's not going to be Panera moms or soccer moms. It's going to be angry mobs. You're not protecting my kids, and you're taking away the right to control my body, getting to those suburban women who made the difference, right, in 2020 for Joe Biden and could make the difference for Democrats in 2022. What do you think?
I do think that the abortion issue and whatever the Supreme Court comes out with is the big wild card here. I mean, and could probably make the difference in some of those Senate races more than the House races. I think with the House races, there's only so much you can do, you know, when there are just significantly more Republicans in some districts than Democrats. But in these open in seats where, you know, you've got a statewide race like Georgia or Arizona or Pennsylvania, and you have just such a stark decision which will come down, which, you know, this will be the first time that the Supreme Court has, you know, has weighed in on this issue to take away a right that they established themselves. It's really, I don't think that we really have a clear understanding of just what sort of effect that will have on people, as you said, like angry about this decision. And because this is not, I mean, this is a partisan issue in a lot of ways, but I think a lot of people take for granted what, you know, the rights that they have. And when those are gone, and they think about, like, well, I mean, you think You have to traverse different states, and you know, this could get very ugly. And you know, when we see some of the way that, that some of the states that want to restrict abortion rights have responded, that that you know, if we end up with this patchwork of laws where people have an incentive to cross straight lines to sue people and go after them, this could get really chaotic. And that's a situation where you just can't predict what's going to happen in politics.
Right. Sudeep, we know that Donald Trump has been out there endorsing candidates on the right. I started to say right and left, but that would not be correct. He's been endorsing them all over the country and still making the number one issue, the 2020 election, the fraudulent election that was stolen from him. To what extent does that help Republicans, do you think? Is Trump an overall help or hindrance to the party looking at the midterms?
To the extent that everything involving Trump needs to be about Trump, the reason he's involved is so people will talk about him more and focus on him more. That it does run the risk of reminding people about 2020 and their votes in 2020 and why they made the decision that they made. They were looking for a lot of people are looking for less drama, less chaos in Washington. And that you just run the risk of triggering some folks who are moving away from that. But obviously the Trump effect is to move people further and further away from the reality and truth about exactly about the election. And that just has a corrosive effect of creating more outlier lawmakers who enter the system and create even more havoc, and actually havoc is exactly what benefits Trump. So that's kind of the very odd situation for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of Republicans would just as well prefer that Donald Trump just shut up and just
absolutely
stay out of the way, but that's not going to happen, and we know for all the reasons why. All right, so Tom, you are our resident Mike Pence expert, having covered him in Indiana and written a book about him since he's been in Washington. What's up with Mike Pence? What's the latest? Is he going to? He's already look. Okay.
Yeah.
He's already running, right?
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't declared. Nobody's declared, but they're all doing it. I will tell you that. So last week, after the Georgia primaries, you know, there was kind of an expectation. I mean, everyone kind of expected that Brian Kemp would do quite well. And he did better than expectations. I think the margin was like 50 or 60 points to win.
But 50 points, right.
Yeah. And the thing that, you know, people latched onto was Raffensperger, the Secretary of State's race, where, you know, again, Trump did the same thing, you know, recruited somebody to run against him, Representative Jody Heiss. And Raffensperger, of course, who's famous as Secretary of State, Trump tried to pressure him into, quote, you know, finding 11,780 votes. You know, hey, if you just, hey, man, just, you know, find me those votes, buddy. You know, I'm sure they're tucked in a Chinese thermostat somewhere. So let's just shake them out. OK. And so Raffensperger beats the Trump pick by 20 points. And that was really to my sources, the people I keep up with, you know, text with, that was astounding. So, you know, I got some notes on early Wednesday morning. After the primary, and they're like, "Wow, big night for your guy," and I was like, "Wow, yeah, you're right," because what it showed was viability. There's a couple dynamics for Pence, and I wrote a piece for Yahoo about this last week. You know, his folks have behind the scenes have been talking up a possible launch in spring of 2023. You know, perhaps next April or May. I mean, we're not that far away from that. It's only 10 months out, give or take. And they've been talking this up, you know, and again, you know, the strict caveat here is that, you know, Mike and Karen Pence, and they operate as a team in all things, have not made this decision and probably won't make the actual decision until that point, until that time. But they feel better about this. You know, they're more bullish on the chances and the prospects. And I guess the flip side of that, too, is also, there's nothing stopping Pence from running. I mean, there's actually every indication is that this is the time for him to do it. You know, there's kind of the Dan Quayle conundrum to consider, which is, you know, Quayle held, left office 92, held off running in 96, tried it in 2000, lasted, I think, like 3 months maybe, because just the tides and, you know, the currents had shifted so much and changed. So this is the moment for Pence. And there's a real expectation that he could easily run against Trump in 24. I mean, we could very easily have Trump versus Pence in the in that.
Well, as a reporter and as a Democrat, I would have to say from your lips to God's ears. That would be so great. Oh, well, what a great roundup of the week that just was, a week when Congress was out of session, but still a lot going on. A big thank you to our panelists, Jason Dick and Sudeep Reddy and Tom LoBianco. And as always, we don't let you go without just telling us, what was the one story that stopped you in your tracks this week, made you stop and think about it, laugh or cry or whatever, your favorite story of the week? Sudeep, out of order, let's go. What do you think?
You know, I'll put the laugh and the cry together. And it was part of what we've talked about a little bit. It was the president in a rally complaining about how the media never wants to talk about the size of the crowd he spoke to on January 6th. And you think, wait, what?
You mean the former president, right? To be clear.
Exactly. And so you look at this and they think, you really want people to be talking about this moment? Do you really want people to be putting showing what the early stages look like before the mob hit the Capitol? But it's just a one track mind, right? It's always about the crowd size, always has been. And I couldn't avert my eyes when I saw it.
It's funny that those are the bookends for the Trump presidency, right? The crowd size at the inauguration. And the crowd size on the ellipse on January 6th.
Exactly.
That does make you laugh and cry as well. How about it, Jason?
This really was a brutal week. And I recently read this story that made me realize, okay, like this is why I continue to read the things that I do. And it's Catherine Schulte's story about shipping containers in the New Yorker.
I saw that.
It's such a great story. It's one, it's very well written. She has a very long lead in about Legos that continue to turn up on the coast of Cornwall years after a container containing thousands of hundreds and thousands of Legos shipped over, and several of them were sea oriented or maritime oriented Legos, and then also some dragons, and then it's not even that long of a story by New Yorker standards at least, but she goes through how we got here in the last half century, and it's a lot of fun, and it's also a little depressing because it is about the supply chain and it's about how overconsumption habits and so forth. But I had a small connection to it because I wanted to buy this one cookbook a couple of months ago by this guy, by the chef in New Orleans, Mason Herford, like Turkey and the Wolf. And it went on into the ocean along with somebody else's cookbook a few months ago. And she cites that as an example of just the random things that fall into the ocean from these shipping containers. It's a great story.
That are floating down there somewhere, along with the remains of the Titanic. Tom, what caught your attention this week?
let's see if I can build a transition off the flotsam and the jetsam. Right?
Good luck. Yeah.
Well, you know, not a story exactly, but I would encourage everyone who's, you know, keeping tabs on the Republican field in particular, go listen to this this speech that Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse gave at the Reagan Foundation on a Thursday night. And it was, to me, at least, it was astounding. It was a teardown of current politics. It was very cogent in kind of the challenges, you know, whether you agree with them or not, you know, again, in the challenges facing the U.S. right now, and, you know, whether the U.S. basically, you know, will continue to be a superpower. And this is kind of the anti-isolationist, anti-MAGA, anti-populist stance. And what I was shocked by was his ability to pull together both this cogent, this high-minded argument. To me, it sounded a lot like Mitch Daniels, the former governor of Indiana, who almost ran for president in 2012. And a lot of people here in D.C. wanted him to run. he had just this command of the, you know, the dynamics of play, the global dynamics of play. And he had these just visceral takedowns of people like the goofballs, like Matt Gaetz, you know, these folks who were like, and, you know, he goes through why, you know, hashtag Twitter is not real life. And this is like, you know, these folks are doing this to raise money for themselves, get attention for themselves. They're all addicted to this. And that's not reality. And again, you know, I guess you tie it back to what we, you know, we were talking about throughout this, is that this is when voters are not dialed into this stuff. They don't care about, you know, whether you make an anime death threat against some other congressman because you're pissed off about whatever. Like, voters are not dialed into that. They're dialed into regular stuff. And Sass, I was, you know, the rip on him is that he never did any of this during Trump. You know, he's, you know, he sat on the fence for a lot of it. Sometimes he would jump off it, and then he'd, you know, get back on the fence. But give it a listen. I was astounded by it. I mean, yeah. I've never heard this guy before.
No, I've never paid that much attention to him, to tell the truth. That's something I think all of us have to check out, and we will. So I have to tell you, I feel a little embarrassed by this, but I my favorite story of the week, I cannot get enough of the Platinum Jubilee going on across the pond. Okay. I mean, you know, there's just something that they're just having a good time. I mean, the entire country is having a good time, the royalist and the non-royalist. And I feel a little jealous about it, right? That they could just go out in the streets and all be waving the flags and loving the monarchy, even though they may not want the monarchy to last. They certainly love the queen. All the pomp and circumstance, none of which we have, which is just glorious to watch. The hats and the horses and the uniforms and all the medals. It's just a feel-good moment. As when the Queen came out on the balcony yesterday. And then I saw this morning that one Brit described this. This is what was going on across the country. A series of, quote, tea dances, street parties, dog shows, and welly-wanging. Welly-wanging. That drove me to the dictionary, I'll tell you. And I encourage you, if you're jealous of the Brits, also to check out welly-wanging in your dictionary. It's not as graphic, or it's not as pornographic, maybe, as it may sound, but it's a unique British tradition. God save the Queen, is all I can say. So, that moment. With that, we thank the members of our panel. Sudeep Reddy, Senior Managing Editor at Politico. Tom LoBianco, National Political Reporter for Yahoo News. And Jason Dick, Editor-in-Chief of CQ Roll Call. Thank you, guys. And thank all the rest of you for listening. The weekend, it is now all yours. Make the most of it. And then come back and see us on Tuesday for the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.